We're going to come back in the session. We've got a handful here of notices in opposition. We will then talk with the administration and then bring the applicant back to rebut. So next up is Eunice Samuels. And your son is Scott Samuels, I'll bet. Okay, well, come on down. Rod Brown and Doreen Brown. Bill Johnson. You oppose? Okay. Sonia Strauss. Deborah Kiefing. Apex. Stuart Samuels. Okay. All right. Well, Scott, go ahead.
Hello, councillors. Thank you for this opportunity. Feel bad you guys having to stay up so late. And I also would like to...
Only in Charleswood.
Beautiful Charleswood. Let's keep it that way. I'd like to also speak on behalf of everybody else. There's a lot of elders here who would like to get to bed tonight, but obviously they've come out here with a plea. My name is Scott Samuels. I've just recently moved from 552 Buckingham to 553 across the street. I'm a young person. I bought a house across the street from my father. He was diagnosed when I was five with multiple sclerosis, and he is handicapped down his entire left side, and currently his right side is going. He has built, in 2000, he built a house to suit a wheelchair, and this is backing onto the property that is being currently discussed. Obviously, we are not happy, we're not pleased with what we're seeing. I speak not only for my own family, our own family, but I feel I owe it to the excellent neighbors that are in the neighborhood to speak out against this building. I'd just like to bring a touch of reality. We all know the situation, and it's come up quite a few times here. But just imagine yourself at an intersection, and the light for you is green. You have the right of way. You see a car coming the other way, what do you do? You do have the right of way, but if you do go, regardless of the fact that the other car is coming straight for you, you do know someone is going to get hurt, potentially killed. So you pull aside, so to speak, to let the other person through. You considered the whole situation, and instead of pushing your idea of going through the intersection, you've stepped aside, nobody got hurt. Same situation here. We all know what this is going to do to our neighborhood, and I'm only just speaking as I wasn't intending to speak here tonight, but I just have a sense that we need to, as a neighborhood, speak our feelings. We've been taught ever since we were kids to be considerate of others. In a free country such as we have, we can be thankful for others that have considered for us previously. I'm glad that this project is thinking of the older generation, very, very much for the older generation. There's a lot of experience, and we need to take care of the older generation. But let's consider the whole situation and be sure that we're considering for everyone. There are neighbors in this area that will potentially be very negatively affected by this project, as we've heard. Their privacy will be lost. Their properties will potentially be devalued. The Dieppe School pickup zone is already majorly congested with traffic at the pickup time, and the safety of the children will be threatened even more. The parents of the school and the residents that live in the area, these are the ones that should be listened to, not the ones that are not affected by this project. If this project is pushed through, regardless of consideration of those directly affected and the so-called right-of-way is insisted on, someone is going to get hurt. Would it be worth one child's life? You might say, somebody may be impaired, but you see, what's that going to do to a child for the rest of their life if there is some way in some area of their physical body impacted by the potential of an accident? Is it worth it to push this project into an area that is so small that it doesn't even make sense to build there? There are other areas in the city which would be much more suited to this type of building and would be a better solution for all concerned, including the ones wanting to build the complex. I can speak on a personal note, having just been married in September, moved across the street from my father. I'd like to raise a family, and with the school being just around the corner, would not want anything to happen to my children as they would go to that school. So let's all be cognizant of who's actually being affected here, whose life is being interrupted, and potentially scarred with no possible way getting out of the situation. That building is there. It will not be removed once it is there. So we need to consider for absolutely everybody in this. And that's all I ask of the councillors. Thank you very much, Paula and Grant.
Thanks, Scott. Any questions?
Do you have any questions?
No, we're good. Thank you, sir. Are you Sonia or Deborah?
I'm Sonia.
Okay, Sonia. Away you go.
Good evening. My name is Sonia Strauss, and my family has lived in Charleswood since 1981. And I stand before you as yet another concerned resident of Charleswood and a very concerned parent of the Ecolvia community. Now, a lot of my points have already been covered, so I've had to drastically edit my speech, and I would just like to add just a few points to avoid repeating items. So again, I am an extremely concerned that the city has decided that there's no need for a traffic study. And as a parent, I'm now already very concerned about the current school's congestion issues at drop-off, especially at drop-off and the pickup times. Again, these points have already been raised, and we've even had a video now to illustrate this point. But just to add and clarify, most other schools have side roads where parents can unload and pick up their children. Ecole Dieppe does not. Dieppe Road is our only street. We are also a growing school because we are a French immersion. So this development will add even more traffic into that mix, especially at the very condensed intersection points, one being directly opposite the development, the parking lot, and the church entrances. And it looks like on the map that there are two, because there's the church entrance and the parking lot. So that would be my first question to the developers, because it looks like there's two entrance points there. And our school buses turn to leave at the school at that intersection. And also at the Roblin Boulevard and Dieppe Road traffic intersection is where the Dieppe and many other students cross. And we've already had traffic figures presented earlier. This short section of roadway that goes from the school to the traffic light must carry a lot of traffic now. There's the shopping mall, there's the school, there's now going to be the library, and now possibly this proposed development. And that's a very short intersection that has a lot of dense traffic. Furthermore, even if a right turn only restriction is imposed, as was suggested earlier, there's nothing to prevent residents and visitors. I don't think a lot of people have talked about visitors visiting the residents of this development. They might just travel north on Dieppe from Eldridge to access the site, and still using Dieppe Road, and thus increasing our traffic. It's not a matter of if an accident will happen, but it's a matter of when. So I just want to clarify, there are a lot of different types of schools, but Ecole Dieppe is an elementary school. And so what this means to parents, unless they're being bused or going to Sunnyside Daycare, the parents must often park. Some do walk, but very few, and they have to pick up their kindergarten and grade one students inside the school. They're not allowed to come out, and they're not allowed to walk on the sidewalk to meet the parents. The parents must park and leave their car and pick up their child. And this is different in a lot of other schools in our area where there's just a rolling pickup line and the parents don't have to get out of their cars. So the parking is an issue. So if this development, we currently have an agreement with the church to use some of the church parking lot. So if this development no longer allows the parents to use the church due to size and space, and quite likely during the construction, obviously, the additional number of parents that must park on Dieppe will also increase the traffic issues on Dieppe Road. And again, you have seen a video, and that is actually a good day. I've watched three across cars stopping and dropping off their kids at one point. So. On cold weather days, like the last 2 days, there are no buses, and I don't have the daycare stats, but for example, in our elementary school, we have 62 kindergartners, so that's 40 approximately in the morning and 20 in the afternoon. Some of those do go to daycare, but that's approximately how many kids are picked up at about three times during the day and dropped off. The grade oneers, we have 78 current students in grade one. Not all of them get picked up. They do go to daycare, but quite a lot of them are. So the last 2 days have been absolutely hectic on our street just for pickup. Currently, our school buses do use the back lane. That has already been described. We're just curious if the library moving into the small mall, if they will need more parking, and if somehow that allowance for the school buses to use that private lane will change. That will, of course, change again how the interaction traffic in the front of the school will operate. And finally, Councillor Habibex, I know you've mentioned earlier that you're not aware of the Ecole Dieppe traffic issues. We currently directly use just the police office in our area, and they come down regularly. As the current chair of the Home and School Parent Association, I would love to sit down with you and discuss our traffic needs at the school, especially going forward with this possible development and Ridgewood.
Usually meet with the principals?
Yeah, I meet with her regularly, okay. And we would all, we are a committee, so we would be all.
You meeting. And
yeah, her, we have a traffic safety chair as well.
Great.
Yeah.
I just assume when I don't hear from someone, there are no problems.
Yeah, we've been currently directly using the city police. They come by regularly to help us with parents and traffic issues. Yeah. So, in conclusion, as a parent of two children attending Ecole Dieppe, I expect the city to fully assess the traffic situation first on Dieppe Road, as well as all of the other factors that have been presented here tonight, before considering approving this development. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Sonia. Okay. Any questions? No. Thank you. We're getting close to the end here. That completes the papers that were signed in opposition. Is there anyone here who is in opposition and would like to speak? I'll ask that a second time. Is there anyone here who is in opposition who would like to speak? Seeing none, we have two individuals that just requested they were here for information, and that was Carol Force and Sharon Gordon. So I hope you've had enough information. All right, so we've moved to the sort of final portion of the process. Just to put people on notice, after our last Charleswood experience with Ridgewood, City Council, based on the Governance Committee recommendation, put forward a policy that there'll be no community committee meetings or public hearings that go beyond midnight. Unless the councillors involved are prepared to suspend the rules and carry on. So given the hour and the temperature outside, we're going to try and wrap this up before midnight. And we will give the applicant the chance to present rebuttal to things that were heard, not present new information. But before that, I think we are going to ask some questions of the administration. the at sometimes maligned administration today, but a very professional team here of Kim and James, and I'd throw the mic to Councillor Havixbeck, who does have a quantity of notes here, so we will...
Okay. Recognizing, of course, we don't have a member from Public Works here who would comment on things like traffic and drainage. We're dealing through the planner now on this, and so we're with limited information, I believe. I'd like to focus on the library for a moment. James, can you tell us how many parking stalls are needed for the size of the library that's been approved, where it's going, and whether that exists, and what the traffic volumes are expected to be for that?
Yeah, the proposed library is looking at being 10,000 to 14,000 square feet in the existing commercial mall on Roblin. By the zoning bylaw, they would require a maximum of 14 parking stalls. I spoke to Public Works again today. If the engineers at the traffic branch of Public Works, if they would have concerns with the library, just confirming that, they said no. With 14 stalls, that kind of gives you an indication of the amount of traffic that a library of that size would generate. As well, it has access directly onto Roblin Boulevard from that commercial site. The engineers at Public Works didn't have a concern with the library and the required 14 parking stalls.
Okay. At what point can a traffic analysis or traffic assessment be incorporated into this project?
With any rezoning project, councillors can request conditions to be added. And in terms of a traffic impact assessment, the councillors making the recommendations of approval to council could request a condition be included to get a traffic impact assessment on the entire project and its effect on the neighborhood to the satisfaction of the Director of Public Works, so that the traffic study is done by engineers qualified to do such a study. And then the final study is to a level and degree that the Director of Public Works finds acceptable prior to the issuance of any development permits.
Okay. So many issues were raised here, so I'm just kind of jumping all over. But at what point did you become aware that a lodge was part of this project?
When they submitted drawings... I think early on in the process.
Like in the application or in the pre-application or in the public consultation?
I would say I became aware of it more at the application stage. Okay. But it may have been included since the beginning, and we could ask the applicants that.
Is land drainage an issue, and what can be put in place for if this structure got built?
This project.
Yeah.
This project. The land drainage is probably the most significant infrastructure component of this project. There's only a small, locally sized stretch of land drainage sewer pipe in Dieppe Road up to, as far as the pavement goes, up to the lane there. And the applicant, through the report, has been requested to provide a comprehensive municipal engineering study to address how they will handle land drainage and water and wastewater sewer connections to the property. I'd like to say that it certainly will have to be a piped internal land drainage system, and the outlet for that system is the Hearthstone drain.
So the pipes come from Hearthstone at the developer's expense?
Depending on, you know, they submit a report that's reviewed by the city, but I don't want to speculate, but I speculate that.
That's the logical connector.
Yes,
then.
Yes.
Okay. Any idea of the approximate cost of that?
Oh, not really. Well, it's going to be a fairly large pipe. It's going to be very expensive. It will have to accommodate drainage sort of from that local neighborhood enclave. The city would ensure that, we capture drainage obligations from that area. So that would mean some pipe oversizing, and if others were to develop in the area, then they would pay back a proportionate share of that cost.
So does that ever come forward at this stage, or is that, at what stage does that report come forward?
It comes to the administration, and the administration works with the proponents, municipal engineers, to work through the design and what will have to be constructed for off-site servicing. And all that is done entirely at the expense of the applicant.
Right. So we have no idea how much that could approximately be, or would the developer, how would they have a business plan? Or should I save this question for them?
You should save this question for them. They should have, by now, they should have a municipal engineer engaged, and they should have answers to these questions.
Okay. Is it possible to have a buffer on the west side equivalent to the east side in terms of landscaping and other landscaping consistent in the area? And at what point would an environmentally sensitive natural lands assessment be made?
Okay, in terms of the buffer on the west side, right now the parking area is closer to the west property lines and showing approximately an 8-foot landscape strip next to the single family home. So any community committee, as part of a rezoning application, can put conditions on site development. The community committee could say, for example, that the developer provide a minimum 50-foot, 30-foot, 100-foot landscaped buffer adjacent to the west property line. You could put any condition you wanted on the development, knowing that any conditions restricting buildable area and area for parking is going to impact the design of the project and likely require a redesign. I'll leave it at that.
Okay. This project seems incredibly dense for this area, and I guess I'm wondering why the shadow plan on Elmhurst, but not here? Here it's overlooked almost by the department. I'm just curious about why the difference on this one. And we heard this was raised as an issue as well.
Yeah, in terms of the Elmhurst project, what the developer was proposing was actually obstructing the further development of the shadow plan, the continuation of Apex, and the ability of some of the other landowners with vacant land to the south of Elmhurst, obstructing their ability to develop or subdivide in the future. As well, the Elmhurst Street does not have the same traffic capacity as Dieppe does, with Dieppe's widening and signalized intersection. So with this case, the Polaris shadow plan and the fact that they are keeping development off the future right-of-way, you can still proceed with the Polaris shadow plan with a development like this, and they would contribute to the construction of the future right-of-way to allow the lots on Buckingham to subdivide if and when the owners ever chose to.
Sure, I've just got one question, just because I can hear the graders outside and parking lots being what they are at this time of year. This plan doesn't show to me anywhere they'd even be able to store snow, that it would pretty much have to be, extracted immediately upon the clearing of the lot. Is that a condition that we ever put in
No, I haven't seen that as a condition, a snow removal condition or no storage of snow on site. You could ask the proponents if they've thought about it and what their plan was for that procedure.
Okay, thanks.
I'm concerned about the parking and the lack of parking that currently exists for the church, and I'm not convinced really that there's adequate parking to add this many residences and to add to take away from what the church would have, essentially. Can you comment on your thought process on that?
Yeah, that begins in zoning and permits when an application like this is received. The people, zoning development officers and the zoning and permits people, they review the plan, they review the parking requirements for the existing uses on the site, and they review the parking requirements in the zoning bylaw for the proposed uses. And what they, based on their review, the proposed 200 parking stalls with a parking management agreement arrangement provides the amount of parking required by the zoning bylaw for the church, for the multifamily, and I assume for the proposed Masons Hall, because there is no variance to reduce the amount of parking for the Masons Hall.
Given we discussed this, but for the record, we discussed that this drive-through does meet requirements for fire paramedic service for both ambulance and fire clearance. Just curious, how many units in your estimation does this bring to the complex to if we were to reduce it to two stories?
The third floor of the project proposes 23 units. So if this was reduced to a two-story project, that would remove 23 out of 64, so 41 units. They may redesign the units and try make them some smaller or some larger and change the number altogether, but there's 23 units proposed in this plan for the third floor.
Okay, I have more for the developer.
Your former colleague, Mr. Fred, suggested that, I think it was he who suggested that once they got into the nitty-gritty of design and whatnot of this, then they felt this design was not going to be workable.
In terms of saving the existing landscape?
Yeah. Any comments on that? What's this, if it was approved, at least the rezoning, but this didn't end up being the plan. Is there an opportunity there for us to end up with something that, you know, nobody would be happy with?
In terms of the existing landscape on site, that's existing today at sort of the historical grade of the site. So anytime you develop a site, you're going to impact the existing landscape, and there's no guarantee that this would be, it would be saved, but there's no guarantee it would survive. There are methods and techniques that you can use with, in conjunction with arborists and landscape architects, other professionals, retaining walls, drainage revetments, things like that, to try save the existing landscape, but there's no guarantee. So Tom Fred is correct that changing the grade and development does have a big impact on existing trees. In terms of the rezoning and what could happen there, if the rezoning was to be approved, they would be allowed to do one unit for every 1,250 square feet, and they would meet, if the variances were approved, they could do a 38-foot building. They could change the design, but they would have to stay within the bulk regulations of the zoning bylaw for multifamily small and for what variances were approved or not approved.
Okay. All right, well, that concludes our questions to the administration. Thank you, James and Kim. We will now invite the applicants to return, and I'm not sure, do we want to do questions first or have them do their rebuttal? Yeah, okay. We'll ask you gentlemen to provide your most hasty rebuttal to things that you've heard, and we will then address some questions to you about the project. So,
the first thing to address is that I've heard the word condo used quite a bit. This is a life lease, and I'm sure people know what a life lease is. It's you're not purchasing the unit; you're basically putting a down payment, which remains your asset until you either move out of the project. And this is not a for-profit project. There will be fees, there will be soft costs, there will be hard costs, but nobody's out to make vast amounts of money on this. It is to provide needed housing in the area. And I don't think we can lose sight that the church has the right to develop that land, which is private to them, and the Masons have the right to develop as sponsors to a project that's very much in keeping with their nature. I'm not sure if I have to address our parking, our safety of children. I don't think it's fair to blame every possible accident that may occur in this area to the addition of these units. This is a collector street. A collector street has a high volume. The streets and traffic have reaffirmed that. Aging in place, in my mind, does not mean aging in your home, but it means aging in your community, which is where you've lived a good part of your life. Many comparisons to Vasalund tonight and other properties. I think each project has to be assessed on its own merits. There were some mention that there weren't enough sales for Vasalund. This project already has 41 interested people that would move into the development. So it's not that there is a lack of need for this one. Cost has been mentioned. We heard comments that they didn't hear what the costs were. We heard comments that they knew what the figure were, and I think we have suggested what those would be in the past, and we're aiming for a 160 buy-in and as reasonable a rent as possible to keep it under $1,500 a month. What the final costs will be based on the total cost of the project, and that final figure hasn't been totally determined. Speaking of that, I think I'd like to maybe if I can just back up to the discussion about the services. We have a civil engineer who has basically already done a preliminary design of the site. Conclusion is that the site can be serviced from some of the existing existing services that are already there. And the only question is how do we handle the we cannot drain our water on any of the adjacent properties. We have to collect our water and get it into the proper systems to get away from the site. We have four options to do that. I don't know if you would you like the details or should we leave that for the engineers to discuss amongst themselves. It is feasible to do. The worst case scenario is that we take our land drainage to Hearthstone, and that's within our budget also. So it is the services is feasible. I talked about the frontage taxes or whatever. I think this will be a net gain to the city as far as taxes go. Many comments about this remaining an R1 area, zoning. And I think there has been a case made that single-family homes actually demand more of a site than multiple family or higher density projects because you will need the streets. People will clear their places in the yard. And basically, that area will actually disappear as is. You might have a slightly lower building in the area, whatever, maybe, but you can actually build to 30. You can build to 35 feet. There have been examples of those in River Heights where 35-foot houses gone up against some of the bungalows sitting there. So nothing will stop people from doing that in this area. I think the infill guidelines, there is a real need to use whatever systems we have in place instead of sprawling our infrastructure. We already have a hard time maintaining what we have, and so it is to the best interest of the of everyone to use what we have available by increasing the density in some of these areas that are up there. Some people mentioned that maybe these developments should be in a particular area. Well, why would you want to segregate seniors from their particular? You know, why would you provide segregated communities in a sense instead of having a vibrant community as a community that's of mix? I'm just the comments were there are quite a few repeats in the comments. I'm just skimming through for new ones. I think we discussed that lighting can be quite controlled by through the design. Parking, I think Mr. Veach has answered that. We meet the requirements in the zoning for what we are providing on the site. About the trees, we'll be very interested in working with whatever group that will come forward to have input on this. An arborist would certainly be part of the team in this case because of the nature of some of the whatever we can save, we will save. And we'll be happy to take comments or have input from the groups out there with that respect. There was a mention that a house will be demolished. That is not necessarily the case. The house is not that old. The houses can be moved from a foundation from this location to and be put to good use somewhere else by someone who needs a more affordable house and has a property somewhere. I am the proud owner of a building in this city that is 125 years old now, and it was for its 100th birthday. It was saved from demolition, and it still has a viable future. I think you have to keep in mind that decision tonight really, we heard some wonderful stories from the people of Charles Wood, and understandably a lot of emotions expressed tonight, a lot of concerns. But this is really an issue that has to be decided on the merits of the project, whether it fits the guidelines for zoning or infill that we're trying to put into place for our city. And we have to keep focused on that. I'm just going to conclude very quickly by saying that, it is natural to resist change, but a vibrant community needs change. There was a time when downtown Winnipeg was a series of single-family homes in many of these areas. But the one point that we didn't really touch on is that as seniors or elder people, I'm not sure we keep using this word seniors too much, decide to sell their house to move in a project like this, a younger family is going to purchase that home. So you're going to have the best of both worlds. You're going to have the young people in the community as well as those that are so established in other communities so well that can, this is where the vibrant community comes from when you have this such a mix working for you and for the city. I think I'll leave it at that and take questions.
I'll just make one comment. You mentioned that we maybe don't, or we've used seniors too much, and I will sort of share with you, I'm chairman of the mayor's age-friendly and seniors advisory committee.
Is that the new term, age-friendly?
I'm sorry?
Is that the new term, age-friendly?
Age-friendly, yes, and it's designated by the World Health Organization and the federal government, the provincial government, and Winnipeg's in the final throes of being certified as an age-friendly community, which is 8 to 80. But the politically correct term now for seniors is older adults. So I'll
just
share that with the
audience.
I'll
start using that.
It could change next month, but, that's what it is today. In any event, I'll just ask my snow removal question just to get that out of the way.
Mm-hmm. Do you want the honest answer?
Yeah.
It hasn't really been thought about. I'm a very honest person in that respect. Generally, these things are piled somewhere and then carted away when there's a chance to do it.
Okay.
But that's a question that I will now consider.
Councillor Havlicek.
Well, I have a few pages of questions, but I think the crux of it can be broken down to three things here. I just want to clarify that an email that Brian Wall sent to James, our planner, regarding Charleswood Masons, that there are 71 members, meet at the lodge the second, fourth Monday and first Wednesday monthly, meet at 7:30 p.m., 6 to 7 visits per month. Other people visit the lodge, such as Shriners, Scottish Rite, Freemasonry, Order of the Eastern Star, Job's Daughter, evening functions, annual ladies' evening, June family barbecue, tea and bake sale. Would all of these events be planned for this location?
Councillor Havisback, we, as a lodge, we meet regularly on the first Wednesday of each month at 7:30 in the evening.
Yeah.
Then we meet on the second Monday of the month at 7:30 in the evening. And on occasion, we meet on the fourth Monday. That's the extent of our meetings, and that is from September through to May.
Did you communicate this at your public consultations? Because I came to two of them, and I don't recall ever hearing that there was going to be a lodge as part of this development. Did you communicate that to people?
We had drawings there, and it showed the various...
Not these drawings.
Not these drawings. The, right. The original four-level drawings showed the various... Yeah, the lodge was always a part of it, and it was in the original drawings shown in April of 2012.
When I asked the planner that question, he told me that he had only heard of it at the application phase. The planners were at the consultation as well. This is a very significant piece because I would want to see times of operation, when events would be holding. This is a residential community. And
yes.
You're putting something in there that would have at least 70 members plus spouses perhaps. Plus
no.
Other guests.
Okay.
So we're talking well over 100 people here. And that's very concerning to me. But this is a fundamental thing. Can you live without it in your plan?
No.
Okay. Can you live with this project being only two stories high?
We'd have to go back and look at the finances again. But Paula, I just want to go back to the occupancy of the lodge building. In the email that went to James, we had indicated what we do. We meet, as I said, the first Wednesday, second Monday, and possibly the third Monday. Then we have another one of our organizations that meet on a Monday night as well, the Job's Daughters. That's the extent of the meetings held at that lodge building. We indicated in the email that people who may visit the lodge could be Shriners, or Eastern Star, but those are on the nights that we're there. The building has very, very limited use. They also asked what...
So let me just clarify. Okay. I'm going to read all the events that you provided him,
okay.
Because I just said et cetera.
Sure.
Annual ladies' evening, June family barbecue, annual tea and bake sale held at the Eastern Star. Yeah. Is that going to stay at the Eastern Star?
That's at the Eastern Star.
Okay. Annual charitable presentation night, fundraising of evening, Bud Spud and Steak Night,
right.
Annual lodge pass member dinner and meeting, children's Christmas party and lunch. So
right.
All of these things would be held now in your lodge?
No.
So which of these would be held in your lodge then?
Okay, I don't have a list in front of me, but maybe you could just read it back. Give me the first.
I guess I want to know how many people are going to be coming and going at any particular
okay.
time for some
at
of these
our
events.
Regular meetings.
And how often are you going to need liquor licenses, too?
We don't have a liquor license.
But for a Bud Spud and Steak Night, you would need
We
a
don't
liquor.
Have it at the Lodge building. It's
okay.
It happens down at the Park West Hotel. We don't have it at the Lodge.
Okay.
We have our annual charitable presentation is done over at the Grace Hospital. Our Ladies' Night... has been held at the lodge in the month of March on our regular Monday meeting night. It's not an additional evening. It's our regular Monday in March. The other dates you talked about, the other functions we do is that the lodge visits, but it visits other lodges and doesn't provide for another meeting in our lodge. and the average attendance at a lodge meeting would be about 20 or 25 people.
Can you tell me then, getting off the lodge now, more okay. onto the facility, because we haven't really heard much about this. We've heard that it's for age-friendly, so I guess I'm wondering, is that 55 plus, 65 plus? Is it, how much is it actually going to be for people? Because some people have stated, as we heard here tonight, that this was going to be out of affordability. So can you speak to some of that?
We have always promoted the project as being housing for seniors in Charleswood, a life lease project. If you're a senior at 55, then you qualify, or 60, whatever. If your health is good, 75 or 80. But it's a life lease designed for the seniors in Charleswood who we hear all the time would love to get out of their homes. I've lived in Charleswood for 43 years. I have two daughters. One lives around the corner from me. The other one lives in South Headingley. I have four grandchildren. I don't want to sell my house and move to East Kelowna and Transcona, White Ridge, or wherever. I want to stay in Charleswood. But in this past couple of years, I've given up snow removal and cutting the grass. I've had to get a contractor to do it. The next step that we're looking at is we've got to go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And a property like this would be ideal. Now, someone has mentioned a couple of other places, but the Vassal in the States, as you indicated yourself, Paula, has got a 5 or 6 year waiting list on it. Mm-hmm. The life leases at Beauchemin Park have got 3 or 4 years lease on it. I don't know any other life leases in Charleswood. We have a condominium bungalow at the corner of Barker and Roslyn Boulevard. If one of the properties comes available at that location, it doesn't get on the market. It's sold long before it's even heard. So there's nowhere for the seniors to go. There's just nothing. And there's some other places that seniors could move into, but they want the comforts that they've been accustomed to in their younger years, and this particular building would provide that.
Okay, so how the question arose in the people coming forward about how will you ensure that people from Charleswood actually get a unit in this?
Well, Paula, what's we have, without advertising, mm-hmm. we have one of our members is a computer guru, whatever, and he's designed a website, working on doing a website. We haven't turned it on. We haven't done anything until we get this thing zoned and ready to move forward. But, Paula, of the 64 units that we're proposing, we have commitments from 41 persons to date who would give us a deposit tomorrow if they knew it was going forward. And these people, I would say two maybe from out of the Charleswood area, but have strong ties to Charleswood, yeah, by way of a brother of a long-term resident. So this thing is going to be filled with Charleswood or ex-Charleswood people. We have Charleswood seniors that have left their house in the last couple of years, and they live over in the Courts of St. James. I think the courts is half full of Charleswood people, mm-hmm. that have sold their homes and moved over there. These people would come back if something was available. One fellow in particular, he's lived in Charleston for 65 years, sold his house, gave his house up to his grandson, and moved to the courts. If he can move to a building that is right in the area, that would make him very happy. As it is now, he gets up in the morning, reads the paper, jumps in his car, and heads for a coffee shop in Charleswood. We think the building will be very successful and affordable to seniors.
I'm concerned about the parking, and did you look at doing parking underground for residences?
It is underground parking.
Okay, but I'm concerned that there's still a shortage for the church.
It adds, we're going from 88 to about 126 parking on what is currently available for the church at this time. We're adding about 40 additional spaces. Not counting the units for the tenants.
I'll just make an observation. The zoning agreement usually includes a land dedication clause. You're familiar with that? It is not shown anywhere at this point.
We had that one meeting with all the department heads of the city.
There's a cash.
Yeah.
In lieu of the pub land.
Yeah. It's not shown.
Yeah, and it's not shown in the report. So
yeah, and I think that report covers that we will be, and it's a cash. Not sure what the term is for it in lieu of those land.
Then we'll have to do an amendment for that to make sure that that's in there.
That was from the person that heads up that department. He wanted cash in lieu of the land. And he also wanted to take some cuttings of plants and vegetation from the area as well for moving to another part of the city.
Okay. James?
Yeah, the cash in lieu statement in the report was based on some of the pre-application comments that parks, instead of requesting parkland on a smaller project like this, would request a dedication for cash in lieu of the land dedication.
Yes.
So that's typically a condition put in the zoning agreement. We've noticed that condition was not put into the report, and we're just highlighting that to the councillors that cash in lieu requirement for land dedication should be added to the zoning agreement conditions if you go ahead with recommending approval.
Okay. Your turn. The councillor and I are going to take a 5-minute break here just to have some private discussion, so we'll excuse ourselves for a minute.